Revelation chapter 13 this morning. Revelation chapter 13. And what we're going to do is we are going to be taking a look at the first beast. We did an overview of Revelation 13 last time. You are going to need your thinking caps this morning. If you don't have it, Diane, do you have your thinking cap? You're going to definitely need your thinking cap because this is a this is kind of a tough concept. So we're going to work through it together, and by the time we're done, we're all going to understand it, I think. But let's take a look at chapter 13 and verse 1. And he stood on the seashore. He stood on the sand of the seashore, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea. He who was standing at the seashore, we described last time as the dragon in context, coming from Revelation 12. And I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 diadems, or king's crowns, and on his heads were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth like those of like that of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed, and the whole earth was amazed and followed after him. Now, I'm going to stop there, because as we're studying our subject this morning, I think these things are going to make sense when we look back at Daniel, and that's what we want to do right now. Turn to Daniel, first to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. And Daniel is going to interpret a vision for King Nebuchadnezzar. He sees a vision of a colossus or a statue that is made up of different kinds of metals. And Daniel is going to interpret what this statue means for the king. The king is very upset about this whole thing. He receives this vision. He doesn't understand what it means. And he calls for the Chaldeans and the astrologers and all of the wise men of the land at the time of Babylon. And he says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to tell me what the dream means and tell me what the dream was so that I know you're not lying to me. That was pretty clever. So you, not only do you have to give me the interpretation, but so that I know that you're not snowing me, you've got to also give me the dream. Well, nobody was able to do this. Oh, king, how could you possibly? He says, my decree stands. Unless you reveal to me both the interpretation and the dream, you will be killed and your houses will be turned into public restrooms. That's exactly what it means. So this is a pretty stressful time for the Chaldean astrologers. And what happens is Arioch comes, who is the executioner for the king, and he's ready to kill all the wise men because none of them have been able to give him the answer. Daniel knows nothing about this. And finally, when Arioch comes and he says, hey, Daniel, I'm here to kill you. Daniel goes, okay, Arioch, not so quick there, Einstein. Tell me what the problem is. And so he reasons with Arioch, and I just picture this guy with a black hood and two eyes cut out, big axe, like Smee and Blog, the king's executioners. But anyway, so he says, well, not so quick there, Lightning. Tell me what the problem is. And he says, well, he gives him the whole story. So he goes, listen, give me some time, and I will reveal to the king both the dream and its interpretation. So anyway, long story short, Daniel begins to pray, and with his boys who are there with him, the other Hebrews, and pray that God would give an answer. And God did give an answer to the king. And I'm not going to go over all of this again, but if you would look at verse 35, we'll pick up the narrative from verse 35. We're in Daniel chapter 2. Then Arioch hurriedly brought Daniel into the king's presence. Arioch is the executioner. And he spoke as follows. I have found a man among the exiles of Judah who can make the interpretation known to the king. And the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen, and its interpretation. And Daniel answered before the king and said, as for the mystery about which the king has inquired, neither wise men. Now, this is amazing. Daniel is going to use this opportunity. What's that? I'm in. I'm sorry. 25. My apologies. Daniel 2:25. We're on verse 26 now. What's going to happen is Daniel is going to give an answer to the king. But listen to the boldness of the man of God. Remember, he is speaking to the most powerful man in the world who has promised the execution of all of the wise men. He's going to wipe out his entire State's Department, you know, with one in one fell swoop if they can't give him the dream and its interpretation. Verse 26, and the king answered and said, I'm sorry, verse 27. Daniel answered before the king and said, as for the mystery about which the king has inquired, neither wise men, conjurers, magicians, nor diviners are able to declare it to the king. However, there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will take place in the latter days. This was your dream and the visions that were in your mind while on your bed. As for you, O king, while you were on your bed, your thoughts turned to what would take place in the future, and he who reveals mysteries has made known to you what will take place. But as for me, the mystery has not been revealed to me, for any wisdom residing in me more than any other living man, but for the purpose of making the interpretation known to the king, and that you may understand the thoughts of your mind. O king, you were looking, and behold, there was a single great statue, which was large and extraordinary, and of extraordinary splendor, and it was standing in front of you, and its appearance was awesome. Now I want to show you this. This is one of the handouts that you have, but this is the Colossus that he saw. Okay, this is the Colossus that he saw. Okay, he sees this statue. Okay, everybody got that handout? Now, in this statue, listen to how he describes it, because what you've got here are different parts of the statue made up of different kinds of metal. And what's remarkable about this is it starts with gold. The head is of gold. And then the chest area here is of silver. See the silver, and then this area where the belt would go is of brass, and this whole area is made out of metal. But the feet are made, iron. The legs are made out of iron, but the feet are made out of iron mixed with clay. Okay? Now, what's remarkable about this is as we move along, we're going to see that these different parts of the statue are basically a timeline. And you see along the top here, these are kingdoms that have been on the earth consecutively, not contemporary with one another, but consecutive kingdoms. The Babylonian kingdom was first. It was overthrown by the Medes and the Persians. The Persian Empire was eventually overthrown by the Greeks under Alexander the Great. And the Greek age lasted for many years. It ended up breaking into four pieces. And that's why in another part of Daniel, you have the goat, which represents Greece, and the four horns that come out of it, which represent the four divisions of the kingdom. You had Alexander the Great had four generals. Each one of these generals basically took a fourth of the kingdom. The Ptolemy took the kingdom, which included Egypt. So you had the Ptolemaic Empire in Egypt. The Seleucids were the area of Syria. Seleucid took the area of Syria, and the rest of his kingdom was divided by the other two kings. So you basically had Lysimachus, Cassander, Ptolemy and Seleucid divided Alexander's empire into four pieces, and that's why you see these four horns coming up. We're not concerned with the goat tonight, though, because we're not studying the Greeks. What we are studying is the Roman Empire, because this is what we call the times of the Gentiles. Jesus talked about the times of the Gentiles. That is, the times when Gentile nations would rule over the earth. okay? And that will continue until Jesus Christ comes back to the earth. Now watch it. We've got one empire, the Babylonian, followed by the Persian, followed by the Greek, followed by the Roman, followed by a fifth kingdom, which is the Lord's kingdom, the millennial kingdom. Now, here's the idea. As you look at these different, as you look at the statue, you find something out. You find out that the metals that are used here become less and less precious as time goes along. But they become stronger. Gold is more malleable than silver. Silver is more malleable than brass. Brass is more malleable than iron. Iron is terrifying. When we came into the Iron Age, the whole art of warfare changed, okay, when iron weaponry came in. So the idea here is that this last part of this statue or this vision is a kingdom that is very, very powerful. Now, I want you to notice what happens here. This area, the Fourth Empire, splits somewhere along the line into two legs, okay? We call this, now, the way he's got it here is the Eastern Church and the Western Church. I don't really know that it's appropriate to deal with it that way. I think we just need to deal with the Western Roman Empire and the Eastern Roman Empire. It's not merely religious. As a matter of fact, the Emperor Valentinian in 364 A.D., separated his empire into two kingdoms, the Eastern Kingdom and the Western Kingdom. The head of the Eastern Kingdom was at Constantinople. The head of the Western Kingdom was at Rome. So you had Rome and Constantinople. Okay, follow me now, okay? You say, but wait a minute. It talks about this Roman Empire thing happening. Didn't it, like, end? Didn't the Roman Empire end? Kind of. Listen to this for a moment, okay? In 364, when Valentinian divided the Roman Empire into two different parts, a short time later, around 100 years later, a little more than 100 years later, in about 475, Rome fell to the barbarians. The Roman Empire fell to the barbarians. However, a bunch of rulers were very keen to make sure that the Roman Empire didn't end. And what happened was the power moved from Rome into modern-day France. And these were the kingdom of the Franks, and which especially became incredibly powerful under King Charlemagne. In 800 A.D., on Christmas Day, Charlemagne was crowned the king of the Holy Roman Empire by the Pope. So the Roman Empire had continued, and it moved to France. Well, what happened? Eventually, the Franks were conquered by the Germans, the German tribes. The German tribes called their leaders, anybody know? The Kaisers, or the Khazars, right? You heard of the German Kaiser, okay? What does the word Kaiser mean? It's the German word for Caesar. So they set up a Roman Empire they continued the Roman Empire into Germany. And eventually that gauntlet is now headed by the democratic nations that make up Europe. And we see them coming together. Are you following with me? What I'm saying is that the influence of the Roman Empire has continued to be felt. In the East, you know what they did? What ended up happening when the Muslims came in the 600s and they conquered Constantinople? Constantinople in Turkey, it used to be Constantinople, now it's modern day Istanbul. But it was conquered by the Turks and the Muslim hordes came in. Well, you know what happened? A bunch of the leaders escaped and began to push their influence further north into Russia. Well, you know what they called themselves? You know what they called these leaders? They called themselves the Tsars. You know Tsar Nicholas, Tsar Alexander, T-Z-A-R, right? You've heard this word before, right? What does the word Tsar mean? It's the Russian word for Caesar. So the Russian Empire has continued, the Roman Empire and its influence has continued all the way throughout human history to this very day. The same forms of government that were there, that same imperialism, is still felt. Now, I know this is a little complicated, but follow this through with me for a moment. The Bible says, you notice these ankles get a little thin here for a little while, but then what happens is 10 toes emerge. Now, these 10 toes are coming from the Roman Empire, but at the same time, they're not quite as strong as the original empire was, because they're made not of iron, but of iron mixed with clay. Iron mixed with clay is not very stable, okay? When you mix iron and clay together, you have a great opportunity for it to shatter, okay? What Nebuchadnezzar sees in his dream is that as this statue is standing now, he sees the statue standing, okay? And as it's standing, I'm going to put him up like this. He sees the statue standing, and a rock from heaven, which was not cut with human hands, comes from heaven and smashes to the ground where the statue's feet are. And where the statue's feet are, what ends up happening when it hits the statue's feet? Yeah, the clay mixed with iron shatter, and the whole statue of Gentile history comes crumbling to the ground. You get the picture? Now, the Bible says that this kingdom is an eternal one. It deals with the Lord's reign. This kingdom is God's kingdom when Jesus Christ returns to the earth. So that makes up the fifth kingdom that we're talking about. Everybody with me? All right, the fifth kingdom is an eternal kingdom. Now, if we understand biblical history the way we think we do, you know, we're always talking about things like the revived Roman Empire, the 10 nations that will come together in the last days to make up the revived Roman Empire. Okay, what I want to ask you, friends, is where are we on this timeline? Where are we? Well, we can look back historically. Now, this was all future. Daniel was preaching in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, in the head, if you will, okay? He also saw, in his own lifetime, he saw the Persians conquer the Babylonians, and Daniel went into captivity into Persia, okay? That's where he died. After that, just like he said, the Greeks conquered the Persians, and then the Romans conquered the Greeks, okay? Where are we? Well, we lived through this. Have we seen the Empire of Rome divided? Absolutely. In 364 AD, Valentinian, as I said, divided the axes of power into two, the Eastern and the Western Empire. You got it? Excuse me. And then in various forms, the influence of the Roman Empire has continued to this day. In this day, we are seeing the unification of the empires of the world, or of that geographical area that used to be the Roman Empire. So we're seeing the Roman Empire coming back together. Am I losing anybody? Is this making sense? Is it making sense? Okay. We're seeing the Roman Empire coming back together into these 10 toes. The number keeps changing, but when it's time for the rock to hit, if you will, there will be 10. You know, 10 will emerge. 3 of them will eventually be uprooted and overthrown by the Antichrist, but that's for another time. So where are we now? We could, I think, make a pretty good argument that we're right about here, right? We're right about here. That was humorous. I was being humorous and really wanting. I mean, we've got such a big crowd. A little bit of laughter wouldn't hurt, okay? All right. But I think we're right at the very tip of those toes. And we know that there is a gap between the time when the church is raptured. Because, see, we've got the second coming here. The second coming is the stone hitting the feet of the statue. We know that we go up 7 years before that, at least. So the rapture comes at least 7 years before the stone hits the feet. Do you get the idea? Because we're not here during the tribulation period. The tribulation period is when the Antichrist really begins rolling, and he's pulling together these 10 nations. Three of those nations, when they realize his evil intent, are going to pull back, and the Bible says he is going to rip them out by the roots. So he will end up having a coalition of seven that will remain loyal to him, and he will be the undisputed ruler of the world when the Lord returns, political ruler of the world. So in a nutshell, this is Daniel's vision. You can read it for yourself when you get when you get home and you want to, you know, take a look at it, reread it again, and you'll see. Now go to Daniel chapter 7. In Daniel chapter 7, Daniel gives us the same thing in a different way, but he gives us a little more information. Now, if you would be kind enough to take a look at the handout that I gave you that has this list on it, which is a summary and combination of Daniel chapters 2 and 7. We have the Babylonian Empire. That was the head of gold, right? Everybody with me? That was followed by the chest of silver, which was the Medo-Persian Empire. Medo-Persian. And then the Hellenistic Empire, which is the Greek Empire. Hellenos is the Greek word for Greek. Okay? Eleni. That's why all the women in Greece are called Eleni. It means Greece. You know, it means Greek. So you had the Greek Empire as the third one. That's the Belt of Brass, that area, right? Okay? And then the fourth empire was the legs and the ankles and the toes, you know, and just above the legs, that whole area from the waist down, we would say, okay? Now, this is divided into three sections according to Daniel chapter 2. First of all, you've got the United stage. That's the stage before the two legs break off. Everybody with me? Then it breaks off into two parts. That's the eastern part and the western part that Valentinian created in 364. Everybody still with me? Okay. Then you have the 10 division stage, which is what? The toes in the statue. So in this little thing here, Daniel gives us some information about Gentile human history until the return of Christ. Finally, the stone that is not cut by any human hands comes and smashes the statue down. And it's interesting because it doesn't smash the statue in the waist, does it? It doesn't hit the statue in the chest. It doesn't hit the statue in the head. It hits the statue in the toes because it represents a timeline. Okay? And that's the Messianic kingdom. Now, Daniel is going to give us a little bit more information in another series of visions that he has. Turn with me to Daniel 7, and he has a dream this time. And this is what he says. In the first year of verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, Daniel saw dreams and visions in his mind as he lay on his bed, and he wrote the dream down and related the following summary of it. Daniel said, "I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, four winds of heaven were stirring up a great sea. And he stood on the seashore, and he watched a beast arising," right? We're going to see how these things connect to Revelation. We can't go any further in Revelation 13 until we get this down, okay? The sea that he's talking about is the same sea that we're going to see in Revelation chapter 13. What sea is it? The Mediterranean, which is going to border this whole area, okay? Take a look at this now. "Behold, another beast." Lost my place here. I was looking and, okay, verse 3. And four great beasts were coming up from the sea, each one different from one another. The first was like a lion. Now, let's get our picture of the beasties here. And all right, I'll use this one here. All right, you should all have that. Okay, I'm going to put it here. It's not exactly. And again, we're not going to deal with the goat. This is from Daniel chapter 9, and this is not our subject for today. It deals with a very specific part of Greek history when the Greek Empire breaks into four. and you see you've got Thrace, Macedonia, Syria, and Egypt, like I told you, okay? But we're not going to worry about that. The first beast that he sees is like a lion. Now, the lion was the symbol of Babylon. In fact, if you go to the MFA, the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and you go to the ancient art section, you will see this amazing wall that they were able to get from Babylon. And it still has the blue pigmentation of a beautiful royal lion that was right in the wall. They've got a wonderful ancient art history collection at the MFA. We just went there a couple weeks ago. I took the kids up there for a very boring Saturday afternoon for them. But, hey, they're going to – tough. All right. I'm the dad. I get to drive wherever I want, right? And they get chained into the back with a seatbelt. Look at verse 4. The first was like a lion, and he had the wings of an eagle. And I kept looking until its wings were plucked. That talks about the defeat of this kingdom. Now, who does the lion represent? It represents Babylon. Let's take a look at the handout that we just had out. Excuse me. You see our timeline, and you see that concurrent with the different parts of the Colossus are one of these beasts. Everybody see that? So the Babylonian kingdom is represented by the head of gold, but it's also represented by this lion with wings. Everybody with me? Okay, so we get the picture now that the four beasts that he's going to see are going to line up with these four parts of the statue. Everybody there? Okay. Verse 4 again. The first was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle, and I kept looking until its wings were plucked. And it was lifted up from the ground to make stand on, and made to stand on its own 2 feet like a man. And a human mind was also given unto it. And again, I'm not going over all this again, because if I do, we're never going to get to the point that we want to make today. We've already covered all of these verses. This deals with Nebuchadnezzar and his salvation, and on it goes. Verse 5, the second beast. Behold, another beast, a second one resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth. And this is important because this is how the Medo-Persian Empire came into existence. It tore three countries to shreds to become the empire. Now, notice the bear is like this. Now, it's not well pictured, but in the text, and this is the inspired one. This is just a picture, okay? The bear is like this, okay? And it's leaning to one side. The reason it's doing that is because the Persian side is definitely stronger than the Mede side. In fact, it was originally the Medo-Persian Empire, but was eventually it just became the Persian Empire because the Medo Empire got completely swallowed up by Persia. Okay? So it's the Medo-Persian Empire, but it is slouching on one side, and those three ribs coming out of the mouth are three countries that it wiped out to come to power. And thus they said, arise and devour much meat. After this, I kept looking, and another one, like a leopard, another beast here, like a leopard, and it had on its back four wings of a bird. And this beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Now, this is very easy to interpret, because without a doubt, the fastest nation that has ever conquered was the Greeks. Alexander the Great conquered most of the then known world in a matter of a few years. In fact, he was dead by the age of about 30 to 33, historians argue. And he had conquered all the way, all of the Mediterranean area and all the way into India until his soldiers said, you know what, we can't fight anymore. And he conquered the world with an army significantly smaller than most of the people he came up with. The Battle of Issus when he came against the Persian Empire and Darius was unbelievable. They say that he Herodotus is telling us this, so we've got to take it with a grain of salt because he lies. But they said that with an army of several hundred thousand, he conquered the Persian army of more than 3 million. And it's possible that he did that because he was a master general. And what he would do is he knew that you could win a war if you could choose the battlefield. And that's what he did. The Greeks are very wise about these things. In the Peloponnesian War, the Spartans are later going to hold back the entire Persian army for a long time with just 300 Spartan soldiers. How do they do it? They did it at Thermopylae Pass, where only a few of those the Persian soldiers could get through at a time. So if you can choose the battlefield, you can win the war. And Alexander knew that, and he conquered most. So how is he pictured? A leopard. Right? One of the fastest land animals in the world. And what does this leopard have? Four wings. As if being a leopard's not fast enough, he's got four wings. Something else remarkable about this leopard is he's got four heads. Alexander the Great was a remarkable man. He probably died in a drunken stupor. Well, he got into a drunken stupor and caught pneumonia or something like this. Of course, if you want to pick a fight with a Greek, tell him that. Because when I was in Greece, I used to tell the church that all the time, and it really, really irritated them. I don't know what it is about me that likes to irritate people. I just like to see the way that they swim in their seats, you know, do this kind of thing. But they will deny vehemently that Alexander the Great died because he caught pneumonia after drinking too much. But that's what the history records bear. Now, Alexander the Great, on his deathbed, when it was clear that he was not going to make it through this bout of probably pneumonia, but the sickness, was asked by his generals, to whom do you leave your empire? Now, this is an important question in history, and his answer is the stuff of legend, okay? His answer, now he's got his four great generals standing around him, Cassander, Lysimachus, Ptolemy, and Seleucus. And you know what his answer is? I leave my kingdom to the strongest. And it set up wars between these four guys for the rest of their entire life. As a matter of fact, in the midst of all this mess, Syria is north of Jerusalem. You know that whole area of Syria, Damascus, the road to Damascus? Well, Damascus is the capital of Syria. Egypt is down south. Go down, Moses. You know, go down, Moses. Go tell them, you know, let my people go. Go down, Moses. Go down. You like that, Louis? Good, huh? All right. So he says, listen, go down to Egypt, right? Now, Egypt is south. If you're looking at a map, it's south and then to the west, okay? Where the Sinai Peninsula is, you continue to go west, and you're in Egypt. You're in the Nile Delta. Now, the king of the – have you heard of the Ptolemies before? This was a dynasty of Egypt, right? Well, one of the generals of Alexander was Ptolemy. So he's going to take – he takes that whole Egyptian area. Another one is Seleucid, and he takes the Syria area. Nobody cares too much about Israel or Jerusalem, because there's not much happening there. But it's an important city to the Jews, obviously. Well, what happens is, let's say, I don't have the map here, but let's say this is Seleucus. This is, Syria, and this is Egypt. They kept going back and forth doing war with one another, okay? And they're going back. These are called the Syro-Egyptian Wars, okay? And one of the leaders of the Seleucids was a guy by the name of Antiochus the Great. What he did is he decides that he's going to go to Jerusalem and he's going to subject these Jews. This happened in between the Old and New Testament. Okay? In between the Old Testament and the New Testament, this happened. These wars are going back and forth. Okay? And finally, Antiochus Epiphany, who's a type of the Antichrist, you know what he does? He goes into the Holy of Holies in Jerusalem and he offers a pig on the altar. Now, a pig is an unclean animal to the Jews. They can't eat pork at all. This was a terrible thing. And so there was a family of priests in Jerusalem at the time that rebelled against this. They were called, anybody know what the name of this family was? The Maccabees. And that's why in the Roman Catholic Bible, these books that supposedly were found later, they're called the Apocrypha. The word Apocrypha means the hidden writings. They were hidden. They weren't hidden at all. They didn't belong in the Bible. That's why they weren't there. But in the Catholic Bible, you have three books, the first, second, and third book of Maccabees. These are good, important historical documents. The only problem is they're not the Word of God. And we know that because there are doctrinal errors and there are historical mistakes. that can be proven. If you can prove a historical mistake in the Bible, we've got big problems. There are no mistakes in the Bible. Everything is absolutely perfect. We don't have to apologize for any of it, okay? So, now, we're moving along here. Is everybody with me? So, we're taking a look at this statue again. And the reason we've got to revisit this, those of you who already have, is because we've got to get this fresh in our mind so that we can see this new beast that John sees in Revelation 13 and then in Revelation 17. This thing is a little different than this beast, but it's ultimately the same one. It's got seven heads, first of all, and it's got 10 horns. And each one of these horns have a... We're going to talk about it as we move along. So we're up to the leopard. The leopard with four wings, unbelievably speedy. This was Alexander's kingdom. The four heads coming off the leopard represent what? The four generals that divided the kingdom after his fall. Okay. Now, look at verse 7, because this is where it gets really important to us. After this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong. Now, does that line up with the description of the kind of metal that's used to describe this kingdom in Daniel chapter 2? Yes, because iron is obviously stronger than gold or brass or silver. Now, these metals are so important in the history of civilization that many historians take a look at. Even paleontologists take a look at history and they classify them by those ages. You know, they go back and they say that there's the Stone Age first, right? But then they talk about the age of brass and then finally the age of iron, the Iron Age. Because these times are so important in the evolution of one nation over another. When the Hittites finally got iron weapons, they became the dominant kingdom in all of the area. And the Hittite Empire rose, okay? So anyway, let's take a look at this here. It's terrible and it's terrifying and dreadful and extremely strong. And it had large iron teeth. So notice the reference to iron again, okay? And it devoured and crushed and trampled the remainder with its feet. And it was different from all of the beasts that went before. And it had 10 horns. Now, these 10 horns are going to be important, and we'll get to it in a moment. Now, while I was looking at this, Daniel says, behold, another horn, a little one, came up from among them. I'm going to let the cat out of the bag here. These 10 horns are the same as the 10 toes. All right? Everybody get that? So out of this kingdom comes these 10 kings in the later stage of their development, just like out of these, you know, legs come the 10 toes. Everybody get that? But among these 10 horns now comes another little horn. This horn is the Antichrist. Now let's see what happens. Where does the horn come? Where does this little horn come up? Does it come up out of the leg? No. Does it come up out of the leopard? No. Does it come up out of the head of gold? No. It comes at the exact time when the 10 nations are together. Everybody see that? So the emergence of the Antichrist is concurrent with the 10 nation stage. Everybody with me? Now take a look at this. And another horn, a little one, came up among them. And three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. Remember I told you how the 10 nations will initially follow the Antichrist and then three of them will rebel against the Antichrist and the Antichrist will rip them out by the roots? We're going to see the same thing's going to be said in Revelation again, okay? So then there will be ultimately seven. But look at this. And this little horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man and its mouth uttered great boasts. Now we're going to skip this whole section about the Ancient of Days, and skip down to verse 11. But then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. And I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of their life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. What does that mean? Their dominion was taken away, but yet the length of their life was extended for a period of time. Is everybody with me for a moment? Turn with me. Keep your place here. Turn with me back to Revelation 13. I wonder if you got, if you caught this. Revelation 13, which is our passage, and the reason we're here in the first place. Revelation 13. I told you we were going to have to think this morning, huh? I don't like to do it any more than anybody else, so don't feel bad. Revelation 13. Look at this in verse 1. And the dragon stood on the sand of the seashore, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea having 10 horns. Well, that looks familiar, doesn't it? The 10 horns are these 10 contemporary kingdoms that line up with what? The 10 toes. And 7 heads. Now, we haven't heard about the 7 heads yet. We're going to have to take that when we get to it. And on the 10 horns were 10 kingly crowns, which makes perfect sense. Each one of these is a kingdom. Do you get it? And on his heads were blasphemous names. We'll get to that. Now, what does this beast look like? Look at it. And the beast which I saw was what? Like a leopard. And his feet were like a bear. And his mouth was like a what? A lion, right? So in the passage that we just read in Daniel, if you flip back there, what does it say? It says in verse 12, and the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. You know what happened? Rome absorbed all of these other nations with their cultures into itself. So in the Roman Empire, you have a flavor of Persia, and certainly a flavor of Greeks. I mean, they loved the philosophers, and they loved the, you know, this was a great time of learning. And the law, many things from the law they also got from the Greeks. And there was a flavor of Babylon as well. So they absorbed all of these. So by the time we get to the end of this, this area right here, this 10 toes section, what we see is this beast has attributes of all these kingdoms, yet they're all a part of this one terrible beast now that has taken control over the whole world. Does everybody follow? Now watch this. Notice what we have here. We have a lion, Babylon. We have a bear, Medo-Persia. We have a leopard, Greece. We have a fourth wild beast, Rome. But then we've got another thing happening here. This is the beast that John sees with the 7 heads. Okay? Does everybody see that? So it's the same beast. It's just more clearly defined by the time we get to the end of the age. All right? Am I losing anybody on this? All right? I know it's kind of complicated stuff, but when you really think about it, it's amazing the way it just all fits together. All right? Now, having said that, we got to go back to Daniel, because we haven't figured out what all this means yet. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 15. I'm going to go right along because I asked you to hold your place. Revelation 7:15. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. And I approached one of those who had been standing by, and I began to ask the exact meaning of all of this. So he told me and made known the interpretation of these things. Now, I just told you what all this stuff means. Let's see if what I told you lines up with what the angel told Daniel. Okay? And if the scriptures actually validate what we're saying here. Verse 17. These great beasts, which are 4 in number, are 4 kings who will arise from the earth. But the saints of the most of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for the ages to come. What's that a reference to? That's a reference to this, right? The stone that will come and how Christians and God's people will receive a kingdom forever after this statue has fallen to the ground. Everybody got that? Okay. Look at verse 19. Then I desired to know, there's one thing that really intrigued Daniel. He wanted to know, what is the deal with this fourth beast? This thing is like nothing I've ever seen before. It's terrible. It's got these iron teeth, and I've never, you know, I can't even say it's like a lion or it's like this, or it's just a terrible looking thing. And so in verse 17, he said, then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, which devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And the meaning of those 10 horns that were on his head, and the other horn, that little horn, which came up and before which 3 of them fell. Now, you guys think you have in your mind what this is all about? You have the 10 horns of 10 kingdoms. The little horn is the Antichrist. The 3 horns that fall are 3 kingdoms that the Antichrist conquers, leaving 7 under his dominion, right? In the last stage of the Roman Empire. That's why it's on that beast, the Roman beast, okay? Namely, the horn which had the eyes and the mouth, which uttered great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. And I kept looking. And the horn, notice this, the horn, which one? The little horn that represents who? The Antichrist. What was he doing? He was waging war with the saints and overpowering them. Until the Ancient of Days came, this is the return of Jesus Christ, the Ancient of Days sending Christ, and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the highest one, and a time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. That's the millennial kingdom. Everybody get that? Thus, he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all other kingdoms. And it will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. Notice what this kingdom is going to do. It's going to devour the whole earth. So if you look back at my thing now, I'll be a little more specific. If you look back at this particular thing with the two lists of Daniel and Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, you'll see we get some additional information from Daniel 7. He lines up with Daniel 2 about the Babylonian Empire, right? That's in check. The Medo-Persian Empire. Over here, it's what? It's the chest of silver. Over here, it's that bear that's leaning on one side, okay? And then the Greek Empire lines up. Over here, it's the leopard with the 4 wings. I'm sorry. Over here, it's the belt of brass. And over there, it's the leopard with the 4 wings. But then when we get to the fourth empire, we get a little more information. In Daniel 2, we saw the fourth empire is broken into a united stage, first of all, which is before the legs separate on the statue. Then you have the 2 legs separating into east and west. Then finally the 10 kings coming together at the end, which are the toes. But over here, we're told, given a little more information, we're told of a united stage, which we get from here. Then we say that this government is going to devour the whole world in the passage we just read. Look at it again in verse 23, Daniel 7:23. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms, and it will devour the whole earth. So what we see is a one world government stage where this beast has authority over the whole world. All right. And then we still have the 10 division stage. And we've also been introduced to another stage with this one horn that comes up full of eyes saying great blasphemies against God. That's the Antichrist stage. And that will be the last stage of the Roman Empire. So the Roman Empire, or this fourth beast, so far we see that there are 4 stages involved. The first stage, it's united. Then it dominates the whole world, and it breaks into divisions, and then the Antichrist comes and conquers the entire and rules the entire thing. And it's at that time that the Lord Jesus returns as that stone and smashes the whole statue to the ground. Okay? Does this make sense? Let's see if we can get a little more information here before we close. Just a couple minutes. I may be running out of tape, so we've got to go really quickly. Verse 24. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall arise. Does that make sense? Yep, that makes sense. And another will arise after them. Does that make sense? Sure it does. That's the Antichrist, right? And he will be different from the previous ones. And what will he do? He will subdue 3 kings. So there's our 10 kings with the Antichrist coming up after as an 11th horn, if you will, and subduing 3 of those horns, and the Antichrist will then have control over the other 7. We all on the same page? Okay. And he will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. And he will intend to make alterations in the time and in the law, God's law. And they will be given into his hand. Well, how long will they be given into his hand? Listen to this. For a time and times and a half a time. How long is that? 3.5 years. A time, 1 year, and times and a half a time. And remember, we said that the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period is called the Great Tribulation. That's when the Antichrist is killed and rises from the dead. That's when he's really the Antichrist. Okay? And he begins to. The first 3.5 years, relative peace. The second 3.5 years, all hell breaks loose on the earth. And it says that he will rule for 3.5 years. Verse 26, but the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the Highest One. This is when the Lord returns to set up the fifth kingdom, the messianic eternal kingdom. For an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions will serve and obey him. Now listen to how he ends this chapter. At this point, the revelation ended. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts were greatly alarming, and my face grew pale, but I kept the matter to myself. Now, today, this morning, we've gone through Daniel chapter 6, Daniel chapter 2, and Daniel chapter 7, and we've combined the two. Next time when we get together, we're going to take what we've learned. So try to be here next week if you can, because it's going to have great significance. There's no way we could do all this in one morning. Next week, we're going to take what we've learned here, and we're going to go to Revelation chapter 13 and 17, and we're going to see that the vision that John receives, because John now is not going to be concerned about the bear, the leopard, or the lion. All he's going to care about is the fourth beast, which is the one that he's living under. And as far as the 7 heads that are coming out of this beast that we now see, John is going to be told 5 have fallen. 1 is, and 1 is to come. Isn't that a great mystery? And I'll tell you, I'll let the cat out of the bag. These 7 heads represent the 7 stages that we'll see of the Roman Empire. 5 of them had already passed. The one that John was living in was the Roman Empire, Roman imperialism. And the one that is still to come is the Roman Empire under the Antichrist. So remember that we got to interpret this from when John was writing. And the angel told him, 5 have fallen, 1 is right now, the one you're living in, John. And there's still another one to come. And this is this little horn that is going to take control of the whole beast. Okay? Is this making sense? I know this is a lot of stuff, but listen, if we're going to do it right, we're going to do it right. Right? Okay.